Food Talk with Mike Colomeco is brought to you by Cento at cento.com, Colavita at colavita.com, and Wines of Portugal at winesofportugal.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Folks, welcome. Mike Colomeco here. Mike Colomeco's Food Talk on the Heritage Radio Network. It's supposed to snow again, I heard. Yeah, I should bring that up in the early part of the show, but did you look at the weather? Yeah, Thursday or Friday or Saturday. I know, it's crazy. It's like spring and the winter won't say goodbye, but that's okay. Eventually, it'll be the last one. We thought last week was, but maybe not so much. I had to drive home in that like blizzard last Friday, and that sucked. We got a lot more snow than we were supposed to. I want to give a shout out to a place I'd been before. I was there at a wine tasting. It's a great little wine bar. I love wine bars. The wine bar scene in New York has evolved so much over the last 10 years. It just keeps getting better. And I remember when the wine bar scene was evolving in Paris with places like Willy's and Le Clos back in the 80s. It's such a great... I mean, if you love wine and you love food, wine bars are great because you get to drink tons, glass after glass of great wines, sharing wines with people, and food that works with wines, which is like most food if it's the wine's good and the food's good. And New York has gotten better and better, so I was at a Sauvignier tasting back in January, or maybe it was December, with Pascalina Peltier hosting it at this place called Racine. It's downtown. I think it's on Chambers Street. Maybe it's Church. But they had one in France. They opened up here. It's amazing. So I went for dinner last night, sat on the chef's bar, just had the chef throw food at me. Great wine pairings, great restaurant. R-A-C-I-N-E. Love the place. I'll be back. Food's really, really solid, and the wine list is dope, and everyone on the floor knows the wine. Got a great show here today. Stay tuned. We have three guests. Herb Carlitz, industry pro, has been on forever. I don't know why I know your name so well, because it's been around for a while. Used to do PR or something. I don't know. You've been in this space since the late 90s, 90s, 90s?
Early 90s.
Early 90s.
Food festivals and working with chefs. But I have to say, first, thank you for having me. And this is just, I'm just so jealous where your office is, like in the back of one of my favorite restaurants in the country, Carlo. This is just too good to be true.
Yeah, Carlo's funny. Carlo's a funny guy. Super talented guy. I remember when he won he was on the Food & Wine's Best Chef, the July issue, where they picked like the hot 10 new chefs. And I think they actually had that party at the Four Seasons for that issue. And I've met him a few times. And, you know, he's that younger generation Brooklyn hipster, and I'm the old New York, Manhattan, old fuck. So there's always that sort of tension between the Brooklyn scene and Manhattan, which I don't see why that should exist. But then again, maybe it's their turn, because we used to, you remember, like back in the day, if you were a Manhattan chef on the weekends, we would refer to the Bridge and Tunnel crowd.
Bridge and Tunnel
crowd.
Yes,
which was clearly a jab at Brooklyn and Jersey. But times have changed. Brooklyn is on fire. He's super talented. But I've been doing the show for a year and a half out of here, just under the radar in terms of, you know, him and the scene. And then last week, I guess he saw me and he sent me food. Like, I'm sitting here in the waitstaff's bringing in food, and I'm like, I didn't order anything, like, wrong table. Like, it's probably them. And they don't know. It's from the chef. And I'm like, well, thank him. That's sweet of him. So,
but that's Carlo. I mean, Carlo just has tremendous passion.
He does.
I'm sure you were here before Blanca, and he was doing the service. You'd come here, like, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and he'd do, like, 20 courses. And he'd say, you know, just try to be here early, please, because I have to take care of the restaurant. Starting like at 6:30.
Yeah, this was a brilliant.
This was amazing.
And this place, I mean, it's hard to pick, you know, catalysts and tipping points. But this place on this corner was really sort of the beginning of Bushwick blowing up. Because this is so remote. If you haven't been out here, folks, the food's amazing. The pizza's amazing. The restaurant's great. Now he's got Blanca out back, which is, he's really having fun. I mean, really cooking. But he's surrounded by, it looks like post-industrial Armageddon. There's razor wire, and it's just the zonings. I mean, the Dietz and Watson plant across the street. Who knew Bushwick would blow up? And in big part, thanks to these guys.
The last time I was here, actually, I was here with a friend, Christopher Costa from Three Star Meadowood.
Amazing, out west.
He did his book party here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. How crazy is that? And we're talking about doing like a home and home and having Christopher come back here with Carlo and do a dinner together and then bring Carlo back out to Napa Valley. How different is Napa Valley from Bushwick?
Yeah, it couldn't be more opposite. Costa was telling a guy, I've never eaten at his restaurant, but I had him on the radio back at OR. Let's talk about what you're doing. Let's cut to the chase. Now, is this the first annual Harlem meetup?
This is the first annual Harlem meetup. I love the way you said that, because that implies, and it's true, that this will be an annual festival.
Well, one would think, especially with your track record. So back, how did this come to be? Because you tell your story. You've been involved with the New York Food and Wine.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of know who the players are backstage on that stuff. But talk about some of the other festivals you've done and continue to do, and then how you got this idea for Harlem Meetup and how you brought it to be.
Well, I was involved actually in the very first South Beach Wine and Food Festival before there was a SOBE, if you will. And it was actually about 13, 14 months ago at SOBE last year, when I was at one of the after parties with my friend Marcus Samuelson, who now had been established in Harlem with Rooster, doing great, giving back, providing jobs in Harlem. And we just sort of looked at each other and said, it's time. We have to put Harlem on the world stage. And we both got that, and in somewhat in different levels, because he, in fact, had around that time also had an editorial that came out in the New York Times where he talked about he was not even from this country.
Yeah. I remember
and the hospitality and just loving Harlem. And so, well, I think he walks around Harlem like the unofficial mayor, if you will. It's just amazing. And he's given back. And I grew up in Brooklyn, which we just talked about that, the Brooklyn restaurant, which wasn't that when I was there, short of Juniors and a couple of other places. But we said, it's time. And what we meant by that was to showcase everything Harlem was, is, and where it's going in the food, of course, the arts, the music, and most of all the people. It's just great. It's just an amazing celebration. So that was February. And next thing we know, in May, last May, he and I are doing a press conference downstairs at Ginny's Supper Club with President Bill Clinton and Mayor de Blasio. And there's a room full of press and tons of cameras. And we look at each other and say, okay, there's no turning back now. We are doing this.
Yes.
And this has just been an amazing ride for the last 12 months. Tough, as any first-year festival is. You're building it. It's new. But it's been an incredible experience. And there's tons of people involved and everybody who's anybody in Harlem. And it's really a give back. And it's really about, as I just said, sharing and showcasing the fabric of what makes Harlem so special.
Give me the dates. Give me the website a couple of times or the phone number. So
I can
people
do that
out there,
a lot.
Yeah, do that. So it's coming up in May. It's a weekend.
It's actually a Thursday to Sunday. It's May 14th to the 17th. The website is www.harlemeetup.com. That's harlemeetup.com. And we're already more than half sold out on our tickets.
No way.
Yeah.
That's huge. I mean, because you might have seen this with events, but the trends lately have been ticket sales being sluggish and then selling out 8 to 10 days before the event for a lot of stuff, unless it's huge and established. That's what I've seen. I mean, that's people just sort of don't want to move with their wallets until the week before, then they commit.
You know, Mike, you're right. And you also see that, and I've seen that in my experience with all the festivals that I've helped create and produce. And this one's just been a little different, and it's been different even on the corporate side. These festivals don't happen without corporate sponsors.
No, and I should say congratulations to this. So one of the hats, I mean, I do a PBS show for 14 years. I'm the host producer, which sounds great. Oh, you get to eat out all the time. That's be wonderful. I'm like, you know, I fucking raise money. That's what I do.
Right.
If you think that's great, it sucks. But I'm just constantly passing a hat around.
You have
that
to
is
do it.
My job. Everybody gets paid. I'm the last guy to get paid, and you don't – none of this happens unless you can get someone to commit to it. And I was looking when I got the press release initially, you know, scrolling down. I want to get to the bottom. Like, who's – and I'm like, God damn, G. I mean, you got huge names involved in here. And across the board, not just like – I didn't see Pellegrino, but not just the normal food and beverage, you know, Southern or this or that. I mean, you've got Aetna. You've got companies I've never heard of, people in finance, City.
City. I mean, in fact, it was at the press conference. It tells you what kind of vision they have. Our first founding sponsor to come on with Ernst & Young. Now they call themselves EY. And they say Ernst & Young.
That's why
you know
who
it is.
That's
and
the
so
one I didn't hear of.
Like, corporate America.
Who's E? I'm looking at it going, oi, E, who are these people?
Yeah, I announced them at the press conference. And then Clinton did a shout out to him. It was great. And I just think that everyone shares that same vision of that it's Harlem's time. And as Marcus and I have put this festival together, this is not another cookie cutter festival. We're celebrating the chefs who are in Harlem.
Yeah, talk about. We're going to break it down by day soon, but finish your thought, and then we'll kind of go what's going on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sure. And Sunday.
The broad view that I was going to say was that we've paired chefs in Harlem with celebrity chefs from outside of Harlem.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you about all the chefs we turned down who wanted to be part of it, because there were tons who've worked in other festivals, know us. They had to have a connection to Harlem. They had to get it. They have to either, they've been up here, they love the music. There's a connection. So there are crazy combinations going on. And again, it's all up on the website with the different events.
Well, the names are, yeah, I mean, Sean Brock's coming up from...
Sean, we're going to see Sean next week in Charleston.
Sean's, you know, is one of the guys that's really put Charleston on the map, a lion. What he's done with Heritage Seeds and
sure.
his farming and Husk, I mean, it's an amazing story. In New York, Danielle Boulud's going to be involved. Alice Guarnaschelli's going to be involved. I mean, a whole litany of the New York sort of A-list chefs. It's a really remarkable bunch of people you put together.
Yeah, I mean, Danielle's also chef chair for City Meals on Wheels,
yeah,
one of our two charities. With Harlem Park to Park, which is a small business initiative.
Which is going to benefit. A percentage of these proceeds go to those two.
All the net proceeds from the ticket sales, 100% of the net, is going to these charities. And they're great charities. I mean, Marcus and I and Danielle actually were walking around Harlem 2 weeks ago delivering meals to the elderly. And it was just an amazing experience. And... for some of these people, it's the only the exposure they have to the outside world is yeah. the person who comes and delivers yeah. their meal.
I've had him on the show. I know there's a lot of shut-ins, and a winter like this was brutal. I mean, a winter like this, to be old, I mean, we do this on this show, too. I've always done it. I did it when I was on Food Talk, too, to just sort of reach out and see what we could ring the bell for charities. And I live in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, in the not the hippest part. I'm south of Delancey in Co-op right. Village, and it's really a transformational neighborhood now. It had been Hasidic and older, and now it's... the last affordable place of the city where you can live and not have to cross the East River, which I don't even know if this is affordable anymore, but there's a lot of old people down by me, and you could just...
Well, you got Hip and Happen, and they got Yonashim Kanishas and Katz's, so yeah, you're all over on the same block.
But my point is the old people, you could just see it. I mean, I see them in my building, and these people, you know, it's... You know, you got women in their 80s or 90s, you know, their husbands have passed away, who knows where their kids are... They can't go out when it's like this. I mean, they just don't. They get their right. walkers, they go to the basement and do laundry, feed the cat and watch TV all day. It's icy, it's cold. I mean, February was like a brutal month if you were young and healthy. So yeah, what Meals on Wheels does is astonishing.
And that spirit is being carried through everything we're doing with this festival. And what I mean by that is, while there are the big, fancy, great big corporations that have had the foresight to support what we're doing, and we have media sponsors that, you know, from the New York Times, so of course the Amsterdam News and ABC, Time Inc., we're making sure that people in Harlem can come and participate and be at events. There are prices, all different prices for different price points, including free events on the weekends. So people can just come up to Morningside Park, hang out, see celebrity chef demos, or buy a plate of food.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of those demos. You've got a whole bunch of demos. Top and, names taking the stage and what they do.
Yeah, yeah. And another message for this festival also is around the need for healthy eating and exercise in Harlem. And to that end, we've also enlisted Health Magazine and Cooking Light as two of our magazine partners.
Yeah, I saw them too.
And we have the sports teams coming out on Sunday afternoon. We have the Knicks who are going to come with some players and the dancers and hang out with the kids and the Red Bulls. I mean, it really is going to meld together food. Well, food has become entertainment, as we know, and celebrity chefs have been entertainers. You know, and that's overused, but really
Harlem,
true in this case.
And Harlem's had a tradition. I mean, you know, Harlem's had its ups and downs, and it's reinvented itself. But, I mean, there was a time when Harlem was the place in the 40s and
sure.
with the jazz clubs. I remember one of the... I think it was our very first season. I've always been fascinated by that story of chicken and waffles and how it came to be and why it was an urban phenomenon. So we actually went to Wells Famous the last year it was open. And Mr. Wells had long been gone, but Mrs. Wells was still there. And the story was this guy had come up from the coastal Carolinas and had lived in Florida. And it was these fishing towns. It was really one of the things fishermen come off a boat at 6 in the morning, and they'll eat anything. And chicken and waffles was like the perfect evergreen meal because it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, 3 in the morning. Doesn't matter. There's nothing not to like about it. So when he first opened up in New York, he was giving it away. And that restaurant was so popular that during that time, you know, if Sinatra, all they would just get tons of celebrities up there. They would have music and dancing. I mean, the place is on fire. And then sort of Harlem at the 50s and 60s and 70s was in this steep decline, and then the cracker, and now it's just remarkable, vital neighborhood.
And everything from the chicken and the waffles, as you mentioned, to great French food,
yeah,
to Danish bakeries, everything.
So tell me about some of the meals. So what's going on Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Break it down sort of by day. And
yeah.
And we don't need ticket prices in exact location.
Yeah, go to the website. So I don't want to.
Yeah, we'll go to the website. We'll have this on our Heritage Food website as well. We'll have the link.
There are some dinners that are planned for Thursday night in some of the restaurants. Friday night we're doing what's like a dine around in most of the top restaurants across Harlem. By the way, that was the other part. We wanted to be very inclusive with East Harlem, Central Harlem, yeah, and West Harlem.
Yeah, it's a big piece of real estate.
So there are dinners happening there. And it was another thing that we announced at the press conference. Frankie Pellegrino from Rao's,
yeah,
closed down and gave me Rao's for the night.
Yeah, which is crazy.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's East Harlem. If people don't know, that's on the other
side.
That's almost the other side. Almost by the East River. And I've been out there to eat, man. And I remember I'm like a New York guy. I took the subway. And you walk through the projects to get there. There is no escaping. Where he's all the way. He's one block from the water. It's a dead-end street. And I'm like... Right. I got a black belt. I used to box, whatever. You know, you want to roll out.
Guess
I'm getting old, but you know, you better bring your A game.
Mike, you're very safe around there.
Yeah, something tells me. But yeah, if that's you, I mean, so the Rao's thing, I'm like, that's really, so you're going from one side of Harlem to the other.
Yeah. I mean, basically, that invite went out to everyone in Harlem to be part of this. And we're trying to be, as I said, as inclusive as possible.
And that beer hall's in the center of Harlem, I know.
There's beer halls. So there are all these dinners that are happening,
right,
happening on the Friday night. And then we took an old Harlem term, the stroll, and said, let's, you know, on Saturday, you know you're going to have a lot of people coming over the weekend, what we might call for one of our other festivals, like a grand tasting or something, and just, this is, we're not doing that. We're going to have the stroll, and we're going to have people come into Morningside Park, where there's an arts tent and a music tent, and of course, food tent, and there are going to be different vignettes of what Harlem was and is. And people can go from one tent to the other. They can see the chef demos. They can see what's going on and experience and stay for a long time, little time, whatever they want to do. And then Sunday is more of a family day, as I said, with a version of a gospel brunch on the Sunday and leading into this afternoon with sports activities, focusing on kids and, again, families. And
congratulations. I mean, it's a great idea. This one, I got the blurb. I'm like, finally, you know, the Harlem's been getting a lot of press. And of course, Marcus is sort of like the adopted mayor at this point, lives in Harlem, has his restaurants in Harlem.
He's opening, you know, cat's been out of the bag, but there's, you know, he's opening Street Bird in about another couple of weeks, which I think is going to be off the charts.
Yeah.
And there's a great need right up there on 116th Street in Frederick Douglass. So I think he'll continue to expand and be a great catalyst for the neighborhood, as is so many of the other restaurateurs there. And Trinez over at Trinez Woods at Sylvia's, who's on our committee, and Janelle Proko at the Apollo. And just also the sponsors have been involved. We're excited next week. There's a famous photo that was staged in the 50s of all the famous musicians who lived in Harlem on a stoop. We're basically recreating that photo with all the chefs next week on a stoop and trying to recapture some of that, if you will, just inspired our version. And that idea was actually brought by one of our founding sponsors, Citi, who's graciously agreed to underwrite it and pay for everything to help make that happen and help to promote the festival. So the passion and the commitment from just everyone who's been involved, the media side, the sponsors, the chefs, of course. You know, we just think it's that perfect storm coming together in a very positive way.
One more time, you can find out about this at the Heritage website. So if you're listening, it's really easy. Just glance at the website. It will have the link. But one more time, give it a shout out. What's the name?
If you must, www.harlemeatup.com.
Bingo.
Harlemeatup.com.
Get your tickets now, because if they're half sold out 2 months in advance, I suspect by the time we're getting into April, May, it's going to be gone. And if I'm traveling a lot, I'm out of the country for, I think, most of that month, but I'll give you a shout out if I can get up there.
Let us know. Love to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Herb Carlos.
Thank you.
Great New York vet, guy that's done so much in that space of events. And now, for the first time, the launch, the premiere, the one, and hopefully the first of many Harlem Eat Outs. Great. Congratulations.
We can't wait.
Thanks,
Liz. Thank you, Mike.
Bring me some bumper music, and we'll go into our next guest in a minute or so. Stay where you are, folks. So if you want to make a great tomato sauce, where do you start? You start with great canned tomatoes. And what are the best? What's the gold standard? What do the best Italian restaurants use, you think? San Marzano tomatoes from southern Italy. You know, I've heard of San Marzano tomatoes, loved them, heard the whole legend thing, knew they were delicious, but I wanted to go visit the region. So sometime back, I don't know, 06, 07, we went to San Marzano in the middle of the packing season in August. They've got a really long growing season. Starts early spring, April, May, and runs all the way through October because the weather down there is beautiful. You're along the coastline of Naples there in the shadows of Mount Vesuvius, and these are really small family farms, really small, like a half an acre apiece, and that's how they make a living, is harvesting these tomatoes. But what makes them great is the typicity of everything, the style of the tomato. It's kind of a long tomato with a really thin skin, super fleshy, super sweet tasting off the vine. We canned Cento San Marzano tomatoes in the prime of the season, which is August. They just slow production down, handpick everything. Those little basil leaves, yeah, they're all put in there by hand as well. It is the best canned tomato I've ever had, and you're going to love them too. There's a reason chefs love these things. They're San Marzano authorized from the beginning. The factory gets inspected every year. Hey, you want to make great tomato sauce at home? Start with great tomatoes. Cento San Marzano. That's what I use. Hey, folks. Mike Calameco here. Years back when I had my own restaurant, I had to figure out what kind of oils to use. You know, try to make money in the restaurant business. So, you know, the most expensive oil wasn't the choice, but I had to use an oil that was great, an oil that I would use at home and also for my customers. Came upon Colavita olive oil, which to this day still stands head and shoulders above everybody in that extra virgin category in the supermarket shelves. So much of the extra virgin category is dominated by labels that sound like they're Italian. You know, they end with an O or something like that. But the truth is they're tank farm blends that come out of Italy, but what's in the jar or the can is oils from all over the world that are just spot on price. It's commodity oils. Colavita is the only one that's an extra virgin that's 100% Italian origin traceable. It's a great company. They really built their brand on the U.S. market. They get the U.S. market. So if you're looking for a super extra virgin olive oil, use the one that I've been using for years on my table at home and in my restaurants wherever I was hanging my chef's toque. And that would be Colavita Extra Virgin. True Italian, great oil. So my first trip to Portugal was 2013. It was a wine trip. A bunch of us flew over and toured the country top to bottom. Fell in love with the place. The food, the wine, the scenery, everything. Had to come back, which I did in 14 to film. And this time, 8 days in country, top to bottom again. Food, wine, surfing, what's not to love? If you've never been to Portugal, it's an extraordinary place. Buffered on one side by the Atlantic Ocean, you've got great seafood, great wines growing in all those regions. You go a little inland, you've got more great food, incredible wine country. Of course, Port is the birthplace of ports up the Douro. But my takeaway was, I thought I'd had a lot of varietals. Like, I keep a list of 130, 135 varietals I've had over my life. Portugal has 250 of its own indigenous wine varietals. and they're killer good. A lot of them growing there for centuries. It has some of the oldest viticulture in Europe. The sparkling wines from the Bijada, the great reds coming down south from those regions. What's not to love? Crisp whites, beautiful full-bodied reds, port wine, sparkling wine. So if you're not familiar with the wines of Portugal, next time you spot by at your local wine store, ask about them. I love them. I'm drinking a lot of them these days, and I think you will too. Thank you, Liz. That's my favorite bumper to get us back into the show. And I guess I heard them say girls prep. I couldn't tell if that was just a bunch of little kids' voices, but it's girls prep. Okay, so it's all girls. Shout out. Wonderful. My next guest, Chef Scott Anderson. Of late, out of Princeton, New Jersey, the restaurant's Elements, if you haven't heard about it, I don't know why. It's gotten a lot of great press. In Jersey, of course, New Jersey Monthly, top 25. Opinionated about dining, top 100, where I might just add in some fierce competition, they were number 23. Hell of a list there. Black Book, Esquire 2011, I think John Mariani gave you a great shout out. Sad to see John go, because the guy that replaced him, no comment there. Scott, welcome. Thanks for coming out from Princeton. I know it's a schlep.
No, it's great.
So tell me when you were at the Ryland Inn. Was I filming? Were you in the kitchen when I was there?
I was.
You were. That was like 2001?
It must have been.
Two?
Yeah, it was
a long time ago.
It was
like eons ago.
Oh, yeah.
Like you were 11 and I had hair that wasn't gray. No, that was Craig Sheldon. And a shout out to Craig, who's one of the most talented chefs I have ever worked with. I worked with him in terms of professionally covering him. But I have to say the Ryland Inn, to my mind, at that time and for the space afterwards, was the best restaurant in the state of New Jersey, bar none.
By far.
There was nothing close, even close. So you have an interesting resume. So, I mean, Ryland was great because he was doing everything. There was no difference between what he was doing and even towards the end, making his own bread there.
Right.
I mean, it was kind of like what all the 4-star, 3-star Michelin guys are doing now.
Right.
He was doing there.
Yes.
His own garden, his own organic garden, his own herbs, right. Everything in season. Really great technique in the kitchen. What a great place for you to cut your teeth. A bunch of other places in New Jersey as well that you've worked. Really good places.
Mm-hmm.
What led you to Elements and how did that happen?
First of all, I've always loved Princeton. I've always been in Princeton.
Hell of a town.
Yeah, it's a great town. But the proximity to not only local farms, both in New Jersey and in the Bucks County area, in the border of Pennsylvania, but to the ocean, to the mountains, to the forest where I can get mushrooms. It's just the most perfectly centralized place to open a restaurant in New Jersey.
Because it literally is, it's the middle of the state. If people
Correct.
Don't know the geography, it sort of sits equidistant between Philadelphia and Manhattan
right.
on that Route 1 corridor.
Right.
And there is a lot of farmland around there. There's still, even though it's been developed in Jersey, I think as the most people and cars per capita than any other place, there's still a ton of farmland around that's been preserved. Really good farmland, like some serious like organic and heritage stuff. And for you, the thing that's like always needed, smart, rich people to support you.
Correct. But I mean, the importance of the farming, at least to me, is, a lot of the New York chefs, they can come to the market on certain days of the week. I get my produce in every day as soon as it's picked, or I can go get it myself. And it's remarkable to me, the product, the bounty of product, from vegetables to the orchards. The apples. I mean, just everything. It's remarkable. And I don't think people realize that.
And Jersey seafood. I mean, I wasn't aware of Jersey seafood until I left Manhattan back in 1988 to open a restaurant in Cape May, New Jersey. Was, a New York chef. It was just full of piss and vinegar. Wanted to buy my own fish. Went to the market to buy my own fish. And I got to know the fishermen. I got to know the markets. And I got to realize there was a seasonality to the catch. It's huge.
It's huge.
And then you look at some, you look at scallops. You look at some of the things that were – I mean, New Jersey's just got – I mean, Cape May is usually the third – by volume, dollar volume, the second or third most active port on the East Coast after New Bedford, Gloucester.
Correct.
Which is crazy.
Right.
People don't think of Jersey fishing, and excuse me.
And it's on a small scale for the restaurants. It's also on an international scale as far as, your prepackaged, your box frozen, like calamari. I mean, it comes in to New Jersey before it gets sold to the rest of the world.
Clams, too. I don't think people realize that they make clam company, that family La Monica. I mean, I think a third of America's clams are coming off those waters.
Right, the canned clams, yeah.
You can't get away. They're ubiquitous, and that's actually a company. They're not located in Cape May. They live in Cape May now. They started in Brooklyn, then Staten Island, but they've been in South Jersey, headquartered in Cape May forever now.
And you had mentioned seasonality. I mean, we're able to stick so close to, the black bass season, into the fluke season, into tilefish, into this, into tuna, into that, and I sometimes shrug my shoulders, at how some people don't understand it, but I, as a chef, I mean, it's like a playground.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, because it's a world. I mean, we're about ingredients. I mean, you can't. 75% of what we do is what comes in the back door.
Right.
You're getting second, third rate ingredients. You can't do much with.
Can't do much with it. And if I can't get it from New Jersey, I don't need it.
So. Elements, the original Elements, because right now you're sort of on hiatus. You have a restaurant called Mistral.
Yes.
In Princeton. But the original Elements, I remember hearing about it when it was in the pipeline. There was some crazy chef guy with his business partner that, of all things, took over had been a gas station.
Yeah, it was more of a service station that was also like an Avis rent-a-car.
But, I mean, not normally what you would think of as a potential restaurant property.
Right.
Buy it, clean it up, gut it, tear it down, and then build this beautiful state-of-the-art kitchen.
Right.
How many years did it run in that incarnation?
It ran 5.5 years.
Okay.
And then we decided to move it above our other restaurant, Mistral, because I don't think a lot of people understand the way liquor licenses work in New Jersey.
Yeah, Jersey's a funny bugger.
In some townships, you can get them for, a decent price tag. In other...
Yeah, maybe they go for $500,000-$700,000.
Ours, the last one that got sold in New Jersey, which is about a month ago, or in Princeton rather, was $1.2 million
for Princeton for the privilege of selling booze.
Right. Now, how can you make money off that?
You can't.
You cannot.
We auctioned. West Cape May used to be dry. We rezoned it to allow one store. We auctioned it off, and it went for $500,000 in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And it's a store. It's not a restaurant. It's a package store. But even then, I don't know. I'm a restaurant guy. I can do the math.
That's a lot of Coronas.
Thank you. For a town that's only in season for really 2 months.
Right.
And then you're just supporting sort of the local drunks and whoever else is buying stuff. Right. Yes.
Then it becomes a lot of Coors Lights.
A lot of Coors Lights. And a lot of those airplane bottles. I don't want to get into that. Yeah. That's another story. So when Elements reopens upstairs, it's going to be smaller.
Much.
40 seats?
30.
How's the kitchen space going to be?
Kitchen space is fairly large for a 30-seat restaurant. Beautiful. It should work out beautifully. We're building a hearth right now, so I'm going to add my wood fire. And
You are.
Oh, yeah. It's built.
That's so sweet. Missy Robbins. You know Missy from Avoce?
Of course.
She was in last week. She's opening up in Brooklyn later. Who knows when? Whenever these things happen in New York City, when you get all the permits. But either this spring or summer. And in Williamsburg, in North Williamsburg, towards the Greenpoint side by McCarran Park. And one of the centerpieces of her restaurant is going to be a wood-burning grill.
Right.
Same thing. Totally stoked. You're there, too.
Yeah. At the other Elements, we built this beautiful kitchen, old school, like Waldorf-style French.
Yes, classic square
kitchen. Square kitchen. I found most of my cooking was outside on three broken down grills that we loaded with wood in most of my cooking. So we had cooks running in and out. And so I decided just to build one this time.
Bring it indoors. Have fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen what Seamus Mullen did at Tertulia, the new one?
No.
Go check maybe tonight on the way out of here. Google Tertulia's address. I don't know off the top of my head, like West Village, find a parking meter. He's got a sick one.
Yeah.
And his design is really neat because he's got shelves above it that are like holding warming shelves.
Yep.
So he can cook, put stuff up there, or hold it. It's really interesting. Check it out.
Yeah.
It'll save you another trip to Manhattan because I must say, Missy sort of based her design off of his and asked permission if she could just rip it off.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. So you're going to, this is going to be different menu, tasting menu, a la carte menu. Now you've got so few seats. I mean, this gives you a chance to just play.
Well, this gives me a chance to, at Elements, we reached a certain level where, what we were trying to do mixed in with an 80-seat restaurant.
Right.
It got difficult to maintain a certain level. With 30 seats, we should be able to do the things that within a tasting menu that we've always wanted to do. But we're not going to be a tasting menu only restaurant.
Okay.
You can't. I feel that you can't do that in the suburbs.
Yeah,
people don't always want to come home from New York.
Committed to
because Princeton, everybody works in New York. They don't want to come home at 7 and then commit to a 3.5-hour dinner.
Right.
So we'll do tasting menu, of course, but a la carte as well. Maybe on weekends, tasting only.
Right.
We still haven't, we're still trying to feel that out yet. But
it's funny, there's, not to bore you with New York stories, but there's one of the best couple of meals I had last year in the city, doesn't matter which boroughs, was in Brooklyn at a restaurant, two restaurants, Battersby and Dover. It's two young guys. Mm-hmm. They met at Alain Ducasse. Then they sort of stayed friends, parted ways, stayed in touch. They ended up working at Gramercy Tavern, ended up coming to Brooklyn, getting their first chef jobs. They opened up this little, Battersby was this little snippet. It sat maybe 35 people. It had a four burner stove with one oven. I mean, which was in the bar. It was all exposed. I'm like, it was pure ghetto. Right. I mean, kind of a chef's dream slash nightmare at the same time.
Right.
But everything from scratch, all their baking in house. Like, they just said, we're going to nail it. We're going to do it. And they started with the same concept as you. Of course, right. It's Brooklyn. It's a little different. But they did an a la carte menu and a tasting menu. And what they found was, once the word got out how good the food was, everybody was signing up for the tasting menu. So you'll see.
It's funny
goes.
You say that, because towards the end of Elements at the old space, we started doing way more tasting menus,
right.
You know, even during the week than we even expected. Right. So, you know, we may continue on that trail, but we don't want to cut out, you know, some of the people that don't want to spend that much time.
And Mistral downstairs, more casual.
More casual, small plates concept. You know, everything's shared, you know, tasting size, shared plates. Really neat. Our chef's fantastic.
Who does your wines? I'm curious. You select that. You have a somm. You have a consultant.
For upstairs, for Elements, we do have a sommelier. For downstairs, we just kind of pick them as the menu, you know,
moves.
Changes out. Yep.
Because it's, I mean, my next guest is one of my, one of many. I love somms. They're some of my best friends in the city are. I'm a huge wine guy, and it was this wine bar last night owned by these French people, Racine, and they were saying, the guy that works there is a French guy, said, you know, you can get better wine in the States now, especially in the New York metro area.
Is that so?
Then I get wines, French wines here that I don't know how to get them in France.
Wow.
So it's crazy. It's really turned around.
Right.
So you've been in Princeton working prior to Elements. You were a chef somewhere there?
Prior to Elements, I mean, I was at the Rhineland Inn, but, you know,
okay,
in the meantime,
House,
it was about...
White Horse. Really.
Yeah, White House.
White House.
It's about 45 minutes away, but I've always lived just outside of Princeton. I just love the area.
Yeah, it's crazy. Jersey gets shat on so much because New Yorkers tend to be assholes by nature. So if it's not Manhattan,
I'm not going to say that because I need some of them out here.
if it's not Manhattan or Westchester or the Hamptons, it's no good. But there are parts of Jersey that are spectacularly beautiful, and Princeton is just a breathtakingly beautiful town.
Right.
And again, to your point, I mean, it's remarkable. I know a couple of other chefs in your community who I just see them on Facebook. You know, just all year long bragging about the ingredients.
It's a chef's paradise. I mean, and once you make it out of the Newark area and you know, if you make it out of Manhattan, I mean, if you take the train, it's 45 minutes. It's a breeze. I mean, it took me 2 hours to get here, you know, driving.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
The train, you know, train's easy.
Thanks for coming out, man.
My pleasure.
Keep up the great work. And
Thank you.
Of these days, I'll have to book a hotel room. But one of these days, I want to come when you have the new one open and you've got your feet under you.
Oh, yeah.
And let you cook. Because I've heard great things. Resume's great. Obviously, all the praise is earned and deserved.
Yeah.
Much appreciate you driving out to Bushwick.
My pleasure.
It worth your while. If you can, remember, get in your car, just Google Tertulia.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The newest one.
Okay.
Find a place to park. Because it's on the way. You're not far from the Holland Tunnel. You can just shoot down Hudson to Varick and then through and... Yeah, you're going to get screwed with traffic anyway. Maybe I even have a bite to eat there before you drive home.
Either way, I'm...
Yeah,
I have a bag full of cigars, so I'm not worried.
Check out the bar. Thanks so much for coming on. Elements is the name of the restaurant. Scott Anderson is the chef. In the meantime, you can try his food at Mistral. If not, wait till he reopens. I'll let you know when his program... This summer? This summer you should reopen?
June.
Perfect. Thank you, chef.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to play a little bumper music and get into our next guest, Risto Zazovsky, who's here in the wings. We'll have him on in a second.
Can't beat this. We'll be right back.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Yes, you are. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You're listening to Michael Lemeco's Food Talk. And my guest, there's two in the studio, but one of them is going to be stealth for the time being. Stealth guest, surprise guest. That's right. May comment, may not. No requirements there. But my scheduled guest, as billed at the outset of the show, is Risto Zizovsky, who I don't know when I first met Risto, probably on the floor at one of Michael White's restaurants. Risto is one of the great sommeliers in the city. He worked for many, many years with John George at John George, helping with the wine program on the floor, which is, you know, says enough, right? 4-star New York Times, 3-star Michelin, great wine program. Then he was tapped by Michael White, who, as his empire was just beginning to expand, was looking to put together a cadre of super talented people in all those spaces. So we got Eben Freeman for cocktails. Eben, I don't know if he's still with him, but Eben is a brilliant, brilliant guy. If he doesn't have Eben, he's got someone else as brilliant, I'm sure. And he tapped Risto for wine, and then as Michael White Inc. began to really expand, Risto, I don't think I see him so much on the floor. I could be wrong, but you're probably moving around a lot more.
Yeah, I'm behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes guy. But that means, we're going to talk about what we're drinking today. And by the way, happy birthday.
Thank you.
It's Risto's birthday today, everybody. He's 29.
Pop the cork.
Hold on.
Pop the cork, hold on.
That's a good sound anytime.
That was real.
That was it's also Kate Crater's birthday, Food and Wine. Happy birthday, Kate Crater. And Ryan Sutton, who is the... I know all this because you know how Facebook is. Oh, my God, I know. Too much information. But I found that this morning. Ryan Sutton, who's the food critic, one of the food critics for Time Out New York. So, Risto, what's a day... I want to hear, before we get to what we're drinking and we get wine geeky, what is a day like for you? Because how many wines a day are you tasting now? Do they come to you? Do you go to them? What's it like?
I balance it out. I'm basically living off my bag and floating from restaurant to restaurant. So the thing I really try to do when I taste is schedule something with some of my somms at the restaurants and taste together with them so we all can be kind of on the same page, or I can see, you know, what they like versus what I like. And I mean, my whole job is to help them focus and give them all the tools for success. Some places I'm at more than others. The ones that have wine directors, I don't have to be at as much. We just have more like bigger, kind of mission statement things that we work on. But then the smaller ones, it's going in, making sure everybody's like got what they need. And yeah, I mean, I was in the cellar all day today at Osteria Marini. So just
tasting.
No. Just
going through things.
Going through, organizing. Just keeping systems in place, but also I didn't taste anything today, but actually I did. I did. Sorry, you want my day today? I started at Costada tasting cocktails for the spring cocktail menu, and I did taste some wine this morning before that with the legendary David Newlin, and then before that we had, yeah. So I mean, yeah, I guess I did a lot today so far.
You're off tonight. You're done for the day. We pull the plug. You don't have to go back anywhere.
I'm never done, but I'm gonna have dinner with my family and you,
yes,
and you
here.
Guys right after here, yes. And then I'll be available.
Okay. All right. So I had suggested, I mean, we could go on about wines forever, but I'd sort of said, let's talk about Nebbiolo, and we could talk about some of the bigger ones, but, you know, Barolo's out of a lot of people's reach, and as a style, it's interesting, but kind of obdurate, needs a ton of age, and I don't drink a ton of it because it's so bloody expensive. So I was thinking we could do Nebbiolo as a grape, and then talk about some of the lighter. And you said, let's talk about sparkling Italians.
Well,
I just said, you know, it's your birthday. Your call.
I mean, we could do Nebbiolo next time.
Well, absolutely. So we've had champagne guests on this show. We've talked about the Bielhada in Portugal where I was last year. Real eye-opener that makes some amazingly good Method Champenoise style sparklers there. Talk to me about what you've brought today, because
is
it Prosecco?
I brought everything. I brought 5 different bottles, actually.
Okay, good.
And for the most part, 3 different categories. So we're starting off with, we're going to do 3 clear. So looks like champagne, looks like Prosecco. So we're going to do a Prosecco next to a French Accorda, and explain the difference there, and then kind of a super Method Classico wine afterwards, you know, because I wanted to try something different.
Yes.
And then we're going to do 2 Lambruscos next to each other and kind of talk the difference. So, I mean, we have 2 wines in front of us. We have a Prosecco and a French Accorda. They're both named after pretty much regions. Prosecco, everyone kind of sees, is very affordable. It's very easy to drink. It's very just aperitif-like. And the French Accord is basically like the champagne of Italy. It's a DOCG region. It has restrictions. And the two major differences here are, other than cost, is the way the wines are made.
Correct.
So French Accord is made, Prosecco, right, being the mere aperitif style, is made in a Cremant method invented by a guy named Eugene Cremant back in the early 1900s, and is basically the wines fermented in a tank and transferred into bottles. So it's very affordable, it's easy to make, it's easy to control, and it can be made quickly.
And you keep that tank chilled, so you have these huge chilled tanks that are holding copious amounts of wine that you're bottling all year round. No one's turning bottles, one's doing degorging, it's just a big vat of ready-to-go.
And wine's ready within a year to go and out there. Where champagne or French Accord and these rules have to age for years in the bottle, be turned. So the two major.
This was the Prosecco.
The Prosecco is the fruitier one.
Clear one.
Yeah. Well.
No? Yeah? Hope I'm not wrong already.
No, the Prosecco. That's the Prosecco.
That is.
That's the Prosecco. And so.
I guess I'm wrong already.
No, it's okay. You're not wrong. Nobody's wrong. So it's affordable, doesn't have to be aged, and the major, that's the price difference. And the major characteristic difference is it doesn't sit on its lees very close in contact with the bottle, and it's separated and racked off. So it leaves you with this very more fragrant, fresh style. So that's why Prosecco has that really kind of very, that kind of like apple, peach blossom characteristics, and it's not sharp or dry. It's got a very kind of freshness to it. Where champagne or French Accord has to be aged on the bottle, on the lees, on the dead yeast cells longer, which creates more of a dryness, more of a minerality, more of a complexity.
More nuance.
It's definitely a more serious wine, but also it also takes longer to get there.
And because you can leave them on the lees for a year, 2 years, 3 years, as long as you want in champagne, sometimes they'll go 7 to 8.
Yeah, we're going to taste one that's been on the lees for 10 years.
Yes. That's going to be good.
Yeah. So as you can taste, the French Accord is really light, bubbly, very unpretentious, great for mixing if you want to make Bellinis and mimosas. The next wine's a French Accord, which I think I got to pour you some.
I think this was it.
Yeah, I'll pour you some more. So right, this is...
I'm not spitting, by the way.
I'm not either. Are you spitting? I mean, I'm not either, I guess.
All right. So I mean, what's this, 10-5? It's like drinking beer.
So this is from one of my favorite producers, Barone Pizzini. They're organic, which adds another layer to, you know, production. It's a 2009 Brut Naturel, so it's got no added sugar to it. It is aged for, I think, around 2 years. It's a 2009, so it's got to be aged for at least 3 years on the lees. I'm not going to get technical here. I'm trying to.
We've talked about that. So that means so the Method Champenois style, which is the other style. There's a Charmat style and Method Champenois. Method Champenois means you have initial fermentation, and then you're reintroducing yeast, sometimes with sugar, and that's going to sit in the cap of the bottle at that angle, right?
Yeah,
and that's what we're talking about, sitting on the lees. And those bottles have to be turned almost on a daily basis.
Yeah. The thing is, the bubbles are the secondary fermentation. The bubbles that are created in the bottle, where with Prosecco in the tank method, it's done in the tank and then pressurized over. So that's why it takes more time, more space. It's just an investment of, you know, it's like buying something and you can't make any money off of it for like 3 to 5 years. That's why wine costs money. Like, that's why Brunello, why Barolo, because they have to be aged for so many years before they can be released. So that's kind of the reason why, one of the factors why they're so expensive. So this is a super dry, racy, I mean, definitely more mineral driven. It's definitely like a baby champagne, in my opinion. I think French Accord also, compared to champagne tends to be pretty kind of very chalky and clean and tangy and appley and lemony, where French Accord tends to be a little bit more moussey. But this is a Brut Naturel, so it's actually, it really battles. Do you like it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's our mystery guest. We're not going to identify her. She's a mystery guest in the studio.
She said she likes it. So I know,
she's quiet and she's drinking it and she's not spinning.
So I want to pass. So this next one is kind of the third Method Champenois. The third clear style. We'll do the Lempres next to each other. You want to drink that? Okay. So, sorry, let me talk. I know I got to get in front of the mic. This wine is from Piedmont, and when I first had this wine, I'm like, holy What is this?
You can say that here.
Holy shit, what is this? And this is a 2001 Brut. It's called Brut Zero Valentini from a producer called Rocco de Monzone.
So the Brut Zero is supposed to imply no sugar?
Yeah.
No.
In all honesty, the cool thing with this wine is it's done method Champenoise. It's all Chardonnay from what I remember. It's grown in vineyards in
Montferrato, whatever it's called.
Somebody
fill us. We have two Psalms in the room and an idiot.
That's what happens when we're drinking bubbles, I guess. It's in one of the crews. It's in one of the Barolo crews.
This is delicious.
And it's aged on the leaves for 10 years.
On the nose, I'm saying, this is really interesting. This is really, whoops. Get close to the mic, Michael. See, this is what happens when you give me a glass of champagne.
That's why you put me on second.
Third. God, it just goes on and on and on. 10 years on leaves. And look at the color, huh?
Yeah, it's golden. I mean, with age, white wine gains color. And yeah, it's 2001. It's current release. This guy's reds are he definitely likes to use wood. There's oak on this, so it's kind of like in that Bollinger style.
Like the RD, the big Bollinger style.
Yeah. but he does like to use wood. He's very modern. His reds are very popular, especially for people that are being introduced to Barolo because of that kind of sweet wood characteristic. But he is a modernist. I think this is my favorite wine from him by far.
And the minerality and acid on the back end. I mean, at the end of the last sip, my eyes were starting to like tear up. Like what?
Yeah.
Like from here to there? This is
super,
delicious.
Super creamy. Super
expensive? This must be. It has to be, because we're talking about how long it takes to make. So it's 10 years sitting around just getting worked and twiddled.
It probably retails for about 70.
That's like mid-priced method Champenoise champagne.
I mean, just so you know, the Prosecco is on our list for about, on a restaurant wine list, like 40 to 50, depending where you're going. The Pizzini is about 90, I think it's at 95 at Ostrimarini. And then the Valentini's, depending on is between 110 to 120.
That was delicious.
So yeah, it's like drinking, like base entry level champagne.
Yeah, no, it's better than it's great.
Cool,
it's delicious. It's great.
But these are fun, really fun wines. People don't really. I mean, it's like, you know, do you really want to spend that money on something that you never had before, or champagne, which is definitely understandable. But I don't know. These wines excite me.
Can we talk about like this last one?
Yeah,
one of my missions in life, it seems. Always loved champagne. I'm an older guy, and I grew up at a time when it was more affordable than it's become now. And I love the RDs. I love all those. But back in the day, when I was younger, you could sort of drink those on occasion. They're great. But I found that for the American palate, like, thinks of champagne as something you drink before dinner, as a toast during a certain time of year. And I'm like, wait a minute. Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. Two main grapes.
Yep.
The really good ones have tons of structure. Mm-hmm. Why don't they work with food? They do. They work the whole way through the meal. And my other mission is to try and get people not to use flutes, but to use a white wine glass.
Yeah.
Do I have any agreement with this room? Anybody want to talk about this?
Yeah, no, I mean,
champagne with food, like if you think, like even beyond salumi and cheese, like pizza, anything fried, white fish, light fish, it's like perfect.
I've had many meals that I've drank champagne all the way across.
Straight through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like so great. Like, why? I don't know why people don't drink it with food.
I mean, again, I think people don't know a little bit about it either. I think it's like great. It's a celebration, but it's more like I want a bottle of white or I want a bottle of red, and it's fine. I mean, it's more for us.
Yeah, I guess.
The more expensive it gets. So
stop! We're trying to be generous and educate people.
No, I think anyone should just go out and feel like champagne can be drunk all the time. And yes, I agree with you. Drinking it in a regular wine glass, because then you can feel like it's not. You know, it just feels like a wine. Drink it like a wine.
And then I even had it. I remember once being out with somebody and we like decanted a bottle. I forget what the reason was, but just to get a little of the oomph out of the edge out of the bubbles and go to it. All right, next is Lambrusco.
Yeah, we're doing two Lambruscos.
Talk about this, because these are interesting. Americans don't quite get these, because Italians love these. It's a slightly different style. It's describe it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a frizzante red, right. Lively. I mean, it's not going to be as bubbly as. It's not going to be as bubbly as like method Champenoise or not, but because of, I mean, so yeah, classically from Emilia Romagna, Lombardia region, we have a pretty fun selection at Ostrimarini. And I brought two different styles because Lambrusco has been kind of bastardized in this country back in like the late 60s, 70s, 80s, thinking like it's just so sweet, kind of like how sherry was bastardized in a way too, because our American palate's so sweet. But now there's been a following, and
there's five DOCs, right?
There's there's actually seven that can make it. There's five labeled though. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I brought two main grapes. So classically, yes, it's a red fizzy wine that's served chilled. So think about it. You want red wine, and you want to start your meal with red wine, but you feel like, well, I have to drink white, or I have to drink something like sparkling, or it's like the whole orange wine thing. Like, well, I want to drink white, but I feel like drinking red, or it's like, why not? This is kind of like a crossover thing in a way. So, and now we're getting like real producers here that classically make like classic structured dry styles, not just the sweet ones, which are fine. But you know, you think of sweet, you think even Riesling's still trying to get its reputation
And I agree too. I mean, it sounds like, even though I'm Italian, Italians love this pink fizzy stuff that's sort of off sweet, but it's like, I never knew what it went with. I prefer them dried out.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what they work with in the food world. I mean, dessert?
Yeah, I think dessert. I mean, classically, we pair these with, like, cured meats and cheeses.
Oy, God, wow. What's this? Yeah. So, great color. I mean, this is dark.
Yeah, honestly, I just poured this and I realized I picked the wrong one. So, my whole point here is just destroyed here. No.
Well, you could just flub it. It's radio. No one can see this.
Yeah, no.
Visuals.
This is it's very translucent. It's light and pink
light
in color.
Pale, light pink, pale. Light, yeah, very much.
So the point here was, I was trying to bring two styles.
Different.
Like, you have Sabora, which is a very, you'll sometimes see Lambrusco that's super, like, kind of dark neon pink and drinks like a really tangy strawberry kind of mineral red cherry juice, and that works really well as an aperitif. And then the second one, I mean, you've heard of grapes like Gasparoso and Sabila and all these things, so that's what I was trying to go with the second one here. But we also have two different winemakers, two different styles here too, two different philosophies. You have the first one, which is from Medici Ermutti, who is considered, if you're like looking at your top five reputations, this is one of them. Super nice guy, fourth generation. Obviously, every generation wants to make things better and better and better, and he's definitely done that. Dry, meaty. I mean, I think about drinking these with like meat and cheese boards.
Dude, I mean, there's tannins on the back of this. There's like grippy tannins. This is not lightweight stuff. And I don't see a lot of Frizzante in this either.
Yeah. So this is done Chermont method, tank method, same as the Prosecco. So it's made in a big tank and then transferred over. It helps, obviously, it keeps it fresh. I mean, you're not supposed to age these wines. They're meant to be drunk young, to be drunk on release.
Yes.
And that's the reason for that. Mm. And again, super affordable. I mean, I think you can find this in a wine shop for like under $20.
No way.
Yeah.
That's something. Our mystery guest, who's really quiet, works at a restaurant where every night they savor sparkling wines at the bar in front of people. That's all I'm telling you.
It's a girl, though, so it's not the guy.
I'm just telling you, and I'm not going to name names. We're not putting anybody on the spot. Let's get the second one in a minute.
All right, so the second one, we got to hurry up. So this is from
Oh, man, what's this? What's up with this?
Yeah, it's a little animal. So this is
totally
this is a little bit of a horse's ass
this,
here.
Right. This is like barnyardy,
more of a cow's ass. Yeah.
Funky.
So this is from Donati, Camillo Donati. Sorry.
That's right.
And this is the wine that got me excited about Lambrusco. Naturally made, fermented in this bottle. So not even method Champenoise. He just puts the wine in there. He puts a beer cap, like a basic crown cap, and that's it. So the wine has some sediment on the bottom. He's like a hunter. He's very just, you know, this is the cycle of life. And yeah,
that's the first one was the heaviest Lambrusco I've ever had. And this one, I mean, the tannin on the back end is just gong.
Yeah.
It's dry. It's bone dry. It's grippy.
Organic. It's hard to make any of these wines, sparkling wines, biodynamic, just because you need to. There's one more layer of fermentation with the bubbles. So I don't think I've ever seen a biodynamic. Maybe there's a couple, but organic is definitely more practice. I just know wineries that are biodynamic for their still wines, but organic for their sparklings, and that's why I'm just using that common sense aspect.
Got to get
of it.
You back, Risto, because I wanted to talk about the Caricante from Mount Etna.
Yeah,
I wanted to talk about Nebbiolo, our mystery guest. Maybe we'll get her back sometime. Patrick's been out. Just letting you know, Patrick's been out. All right, enough said. We got to wrap it up. It's been an hour. Liz gets so mad when this show goes over an hour because then she has to edit it. It's like, oh my God, Michael, can you possibly do 60 minutes? I mean, you have a clock in front of you. All right, thank you.
Thank you, man.
You've been listening to Risto Zazovsky, one of the great psalms in New York City, obviously passionate about what he does. The mystery guest is going to be unnamed because that's what mystery guests are.
Oh, it's Bryn from Pearl and Ash, okay?
Who's smiling.
Say hi.
Hi
to the people.
Lips are getting purple. Hi to everybody. I'm your host, Michael Meck. We'll be back next week with more guests. I don't know who they are. I don't think I've even booked the show yet, but we will. And now we're going to go eat, drink, and be merry at Roberta's. See you next week, folks, on that note.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.